This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Hey, everybody.
Sure. Hello.
Hey. We are the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game Team. We make the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. I would like each member of the panel to introduce themselves at this moment, starting with the woman to my right.
Hi, I'm Liz Fain. I don't literally make the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. That's, like, printed by some people in Texas. I fill out spreadsheets with card names and powers and numbers.
I'm Mike Salinger. I'm the lead designer on the game, or at least so far. But this set that we're about to talk about has had a very different pattern, but this is essentially my idea, and the rest of these guys came along with it. It was pretty great.
I'm Chad Brown. I do mostly development, but also filling out spreadsheets and numbers and whatnot. Do not actually draw things or cut cards, at least when I can help it.
That's right.
I'm Vic Wirtz. I rewrite all the words these guys give me.
At least twice.
Very, very true.
I'm Keith Richmond. I do a little bit of all the things they do, but to a lesser extent, but you know, across a broad base.
Yes.
And Keith also handles most of our organized play scenarios, sure, which we'll be talking about in the near future. So yeah, that's us.
Yeah. So it's Keith's fault.
Well, yeah, always.
So, if you were at the banquet last night, you heard me wax poetical about our team's abilities to do the kind of thing that we said we wanted to do, even though we didn't know we could do it. And so we did it. And so we'll go over all of that ground today, in case you were not there, or you have to use my magical internet device. I will start with where I started yesterday, and then we'll jump all over the place after that. The design team has made, up to this point, four giant box sets, 32 adventure decks, 25 character decks, promo packs, play mats, all sorts of things that, you know, we've just been cranking out product over the years, and people really liked it. And we went to Paizo and kind of mutually went to each other and said, we need to take a short break to reassess what we're doing. Like, we just need to sit back because we've now made the equivalent of 18 Magic sets. And that's a lot. I used to work on Magic the Gathering. That's a lot of cards, as it turns out. And they all interact with each other, and they all do crazy things. And especially when Keith and Liz came on, like, Chad and I thought we were doing crazy things. And then these people showed up. I don't know what the hell happened. So there's all sorts of massive interactions between everything, and we just wanted to sit back and reassess. At the same time, we were looking at our game's footprint on the shelves. I walked into a store that we have in Seattle called Mox Boarding House, one of the great board game stores, and saw somebody, one of the employees, sorting cards underneath a display of Pathfinder Adventure card game products. Precariously placed Pathfinder Adventure card game products with all of the box sets right over his head. And I said, do you sit here often and do this? And he said, yes, I do that every day. And he said, have those ever fell on your head? And he says, yes, that happens every day. And I was like, I am not going to jail for this. It's time to take another look at the size of the boxes that we make and what goes in them. So we sat down with Vic and Lisa and Eric and Jeff and just dreamed about what we could make, and now we're getting to the point where we've been working on that for a little while, and we were able to announce last night what we are doing in 2019. The short version, and we will go into a great deal more depth on it here, is that we are releasing the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game Core Set, which is a generic universal base set that can be used with any Pathfinder Adventure Card Game product ever. That is, you can send it backwards in time, you can send it forwards in time, it'll all do, it'll work with anything we put out. In addition, we are producing an adventure path called Curse of the Crimson Throne, which some of you may have heard those words before. Curse of the Crimson Throne is an adventure path like Mummy's Mask or Wrath of the Righteous in that it runs from Adventure Deck 6, or Adventure Deck 1 to Adventure Deck 6, except the concept of adventure decks is going away. There will still be adventures, but this will all come in one box. Curse of the Crimson Throne will be a single product that basically welds itself onto the core set. And then when you're done with that, you'll take that out. You can play the core set by itself. You can weld on Curse of the Crimson Throne. When you're done with that, you can pull off Curse of the Crimson Throne and maybe pull in a different set of adventures, which might be of any size. Right now, we're still thinking about the big stuff, but we're talking about smaller things that we can do if we want. And that will be our model going forward till we reconsider it, because that's how we work. So that is the overview of what we announced at the banquet. A couple of very important things. The first is retrocompatibility is very important to us. We do not want to invalidate anybody's sets that they've already bought. One of the missions of this is to make Wrath of the Righteous and Skull and Shackles and Mummy's Mask and Rise of the Rune Lords more fun. And so we're going to make sure that we have the way you play those games with the new rules will feel even better than it feels right now. We want to make sure that we can continue to use other sets for organized play if possible, you know, things like that, right? It's very important to us to not invalidate all the work we've done so far, mostly because we really like it. And so that's basically it. It's sort of the biggest change we've ever made to the Pathfinder game, but nothing on the scale of what's happening to the other Pathfinder game. This is not a second edition. We're not, you know, tossing everything out and starting over. We're not, like, looking at how we, you know, present. Like, we're looking at how we present things for maximum clarity and utility, but not from the point of view of we wish this game was something different. That's not our goal. So that's basically the overview. Did I miss anything in sort of the goals there, Vic, or anything like that?
No, I think that covers it.
Yeah.
And the other thing we announced at the banquet last night was the next organized play season.
Yep. Keith, you want to talk about Season of Tapestries, Tide?
Sure. As we did with Season of Fact and Favored, we are tied in with the RPG side of organized play at the same time. So at Gen Con, we'll be launching the next season, Season of Tapestries, Tide, in which you will be caught up in the same events underway there with the special and dealing with the... I might not pronounce this right. Gochin Tapestry?
Mm-hmm.
At that point, things will diverge a little bit. The ACG folks will be dealing with things in a slightly different section of the world as the RP folks. But it will still create a greater story together. And we will, as we've tried to do in the past, throw in some boons for people who do both, and otherwise present a good story that works together. I think much like the previous seasons, that'll be 1 through 6, and we are discussing, much like we did with Faction's Favor and some of the previous ones, the idea of promo series, and those we do like to do schedule permitting. We have some great ideas for that.
I should talk a little bit about the timing of those objects. So the as Keith mentioned, Tapestry's Tide will run from August all the way to PaizoCon. That is when we will debut the new core set and the Curse of the Crimson Throne. So we'll have it will go to, if I understand it correctly from Vic, it will go to subscribers like the day before the convention or something like that.
Street date, day before the con, yeah. Subscribers ship a little bit before that.
Got it, great. And so, but for all practical purposes, people's first exposure to that will be right here. We will also, it is our intent, although I don't know that we haven't laid any groundwork on this yet, to have an organized play campaign that goes with the launch of Curse of the Crimson Throne. Although, like I said, we haven't done any work on that yet, so we don't know exactly what that will be. We don't know what the RPG organized play plans after that are either. So we're gonna want to be a part of that as well because that's worked out really well for us. So, but yeah, we're really excited about the fact that we essentially get to walk into PaizoCon with, you know, boxes and boxes of stuff and say, you guys want this? And folks probably will. So it should be pretty great. Mm-hmm. All right, we want to talk about what's in those boxes?
Seems like a pretty good way to go forward with that.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
So if we start with the core box set, if any of you have been playtesting this weekend, you've probably noticed that we've been drawing scenarios from one of Paizo's great adventures called Dragon's Demand. So we'll have a full run through the plot of Dragon's Demand inside of the core set. There is also a couple of extra scenarios that we've added of interest. You know, things like a really good enter here scenario, similar to how Mummy's Mask gave you a pack of cards you can go right into without digging into the rest of the box. And we also have something that we've been alternately referring to as either a procedural, procedural or a random generated scenario. Essentially, it's a guideline for I have exhausted the contents of this box because I love the game and I play every night, and it turns out that we cannot put out a new adventure every night. Certainly not for Vic's sake. I don't even know how he'd possibly rewrite those words twice every day. And so essentially it is some charts where you make some choices and or roll some dice and can generate a scenario. I will flat out say that it will not be as, we'll say, well-tuned as a fully designed and developed scenario, but it should be eminently playable for people who want more fun out of the box. Thusly we can kind of deliver something like infinite scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to say, a bit like more like the RPG where we tell you how, inform you about how to use this core set as a kit for making your own games.
We certainly, when we put out Rise of the Rune Lords, we were not prepared for how quickly people played all of it. And how late we were with delivering the second set, like the day after we released the game. And so we think that both by releasing core with some multiple play variety and releasing Curse of the Crimson Throne as an entire adventure path on the same day, we might have conquered that problem. But we don't know that for sure. So the problem we've always sort of looked at is if we put it all out at once, what do we do for an encore for those people, right? Because we can't produce an adventure path very often. And so we need to be looking at, you know, what we can do to make sure that, you know, organized play is available right away and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be an interesting adventure. Chad, you want to talk about, like, what's changed in the game?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask if you think it's okay to talk about the story a little bit.
Oh, sure. Dragon's Demand?
No, just how we're presenting it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because I think one of the biggest changes we're looking at now is So when we launched Rise of the Rune Lords, we saw a lot of people playing it a lot. People were really happy with it. It was great. But we did go back and look and see what sort of problems people had, what comments people had. And one of the biggest things we got from people was that they really liked the game. They liked seeing the story. They liked feeling the sort of Pathfinder adventure. The adventure path of Rise of the Rune Lords came out. But for people who hadn't played Rise of the Rune Lords or hadn't heard of it, they were having a little trouble following the story. At the time, our answer was, if you would like more information about the story of Rise of the Rune Lords, our friends at Paizo have one or, let's say, six products just for you. And that was actually pretty good. A lot of people were going back and forth. We actually had several people, I kid you not, ask us if we'd ever considered making an RPG version of this game. that was great. You should work on that. Yeah. But so in core and moving forward, instead of having the story sort of parceled out over scenario cards and adventure path cards, which if you've played the game, you might have noticed tended to get kind of small and eat into the art box and still be kind of small and kind of hard to read, we're moving to what we're calling a storybook approach. So you're going to actually have a book that's going to say, hey, here's the story of what you're playing. You'll have enough text to read that'll describe the things going on. It'll lay that out for you in a way that hopefully is a little clearer. And this honestly came out of our first experiments with the organized play program. We started off with, hey, we're going to make scenarios on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper instead of little cards with art on them. And we found that people like that a lot, and we're going to try to adopt that concept moving forward.
Have a whole page.
Yeah. Mike spends all his time saying the page is not as big as you think it is.
That's right.
And we still go, it's a full page. It's great.
Although I will say, it's actually, people are like, oh my god, you're gonna have to write so much more text. It's actually easier to write, 350 words about a story than it is to write an 8-line block that compresses the entire story into something that you actually understand and want to play. And obviously the result is people, like listening to what exactly are we doing, and hey, there's some dialogue all of a sudden. These characters actually sound interesting. We might actually want to save them.
Are we saving these guys or killing them?
Yeah, why are we taking these guys?
We're defeating them. What does that mean?
Exactly. So now I found that particularly challenging in Mummy's Mask when Liz and I were laying that out, and we're like, okay, we got bug people now. Exactly. Yeah. Why do we have bug people?
Okay, so there's bee people, and you have to save their babies, but they don't want you to save their babies because they don't know you're saving them.
Yeah. It's really...
You got this much space on the card to convey that.
It definitely happened. So I'm very happy with this result. It's I knocked out Dragon's Demand in one day, and I really enjoyed it. It was like a very refreshing way to write essentially cards. And so yeah, it's good. It really feels like people will feel like they're part of the Pathfinder universe, which is a great thing to feel like you're part of right away. And for those who don't care, they'll just skip right over and go to the beat stuff.
Yeah. Part. They'll still tell you how to set it up and how to play and how to win, and that'll be
and it also allows us to write scenarios that are a little more complicated. The classic example of the thing Chad is talking about was the Black Maga scenario. Here comes the flood in the initial in deck 3 of Rise of the Rune Lord, which had an art box that was thinner than my phone from the side. Right? it was pathetic. And we're like, we're never doing this. I cannot do this anymore. So it worked out.
Yeah, that gets us into a little bit some of the changes we're making to the game. In order to make Rise of the Rune Lords work, there were certain assumptions built into to how things were presented, how the defaults worked. And that that let us get the game out there and get the game running without making you figure out everything as you were learning the game. But as we got more complicated, as we built the second and third and fourth adventure path, we would often find that when Vic would have to rewrite words not once or twice, but four or five times, it was because we wanted to do things that turned off part of the games and replaced them. And because of the way the rules worked, we would have to say, okay, here's a part of the game, here's how it normally works, now don't do that, do this other thing instead. And then we'd have these loops where Vic would say, this is great, but you forgot these two things, and how about this? And we'd say, that's great, but we forgot these other two things. And so you ended up with these scenario cards that were, entire walls of text that you could mostly make out.
Even got to the point in Mummy's Mask where we're like, what if we use the second card sometimes? That would kind of work. And still, if you go back and look at the FAQs, you'll find that sometimes we miss some things where there were corners we didn't quite cover. So we're going to try to back away from that a little bit and have, with the full page, we can have a little bit more room to explain how things are going. So the default mode in Rise of the Rune Lords is, hey, there's a villain, there's some henchmen, there's some locations. You kind of know how that works. We're still in that mode of play. But with the storybook approach, we're going to have a little bit more room to say, hey, your goals are slightly different here. It's not always, hey, there's a villain, we're trying to corner the villain. So we've introduced different ways to lay out locations. We've introduced different ways of cornering the villain. If you've done the playtesting, you've probably seen some of the different varieties of scenarios that kinds of scenarios we're putting out. Some of that comes just from the wealth of scenarios. I've actually never counted how many scenarios we've made since Rise of the Rune Lords. Keith might know this, including all the organized play ones, but I'm guessing it's around 250?
It's 25. Do you have what's that?
Sure.
Yeah, about 250.
So,
and you know, I mean, every time, so in Rise of the Rune Lords, we had, like, you know, we can get one really crazy scenario every adventure, and the rest of it's just got to play normally because people don't want that. When we got the Mummy's Mask, there were like five total ordinary scenarios in, you know, and then all of a sudden there are camels racing around a corner and a sky barge moving around, and we have to get to the top of this floating pyramid and all that. None of that made any sense under our rules, so we had to explain all that. This time we decided to go with, what if the rules gave you the platform on which to build other scenarios so that we can let you understand that you don't have to have a villain. We're not starting there. There will be a villain rule, and it will be the same villain rule you've been using from the beginning, but it gloms onto the side of what you are doing rather than being the default answer to what is happening in every scenario. So we'll tell you when you have a villain and you use that. You know, things like that have made the writing of scenarios quite a bit easier.
Yeah, we talk around the design room a lot about switches, and so, yeah, like turning off switches often, you know, turning off rules often takes up as much space as turning on rules, so because we have a little more room to work with the scenario size, just describing rules, we're going to fit in like 60, 70 words, yeah, we can start from a lower base and build up a little bit more and do more interesting things. Or the same interesting things, but with fewer words that are clearer.
Yeah, hopefully they're easier to understand. Yep. And that concept led us into the idea of switches. And this is something Keith and I have been talking about for a long time, and other people too. But one of the other things that we wanted to do, another bit of feedback we got early on, was that for many people, Rise of the Rune Lords, the game was fun, and they really enjoyed it, and they played the hell out of it, which was great. But also, it got to be a little bit too easy. And there were different reasons for that. You could get ahead of the power curve a little bit. You could just play it a lot and develop some system mastery. And honestly, there's a big discussion about how hard the game should be. The hardcore co-op game players often want a challenge, but the typical failure rate in an RPG... Actually, Mike asked me this question very early on in Rise of the Rune Lords development.
Right.
It's like, how often do people fail in an RPG? And I'm like, basically never. Because failure isn't what you're doing, you're trying to tell a story. So things can go wrong. Sometimes things will go very wrong, and then you'll have to deal as a campaign, but you don't stop. The game doesn't say, all right, well, you guys are done. You can have the TPK, and that does happen, but that's, in my experience, more of a party group discussion, actually more of a player group discussion. Do you want to have that? Do you want to deal? And how do you deal? So we built the game to sort of recreate that RPG feeling of, well, most of the time you're going to succeed, but things will go better or worse, and kind of carry that. Excuse me. Kind of carry that through. But sort of in order to address that, oh, some people would like the game to be a little harder, we've been discussing ways to adjust the difficulty. In Rise of the Rune Lords, early on we said, well, do we want a difficulty switch? And different people had different opinions, but in my opinion, it came down to a core. It's a pretty complex game to teach people at the start. It's kind of a new concept, so also saying, hey, here's a bunch of ways you can adjust it, felt like a little bit too much to throw at the beginning. So we've been experimenting with different ways to add those switches in. So if you want the game to be a little faster, we have a way to do that. If you want the game to be a little longer, we have a way to do that. If you want the game to be a little harder, we have ways to do that. And so we've been experimenting, and those of you who've been playtesting have seen some of the ways we've been doing that. We have ways to scale the locations based on size. If you want a faster game, if you want a longer game, Actually had people say, why would I want a longer game? But I went down to GameStorm a couple months ago and talked to a guy.
Sweet loots, obviously.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I talked to a guy at GameStorm, and he's like, hey, I see that you're playtesting with a faster game, and that's cool, but my group plays once a week, and we don't want to set up the game three times a night. We would rather play once and have a big, long, involved story. And I'm like, cool, we have settings for you. We're not running them at the playtest at GameStorm because we've got new people, but that option does exist for you. And he's like, great, that's all I wanted to hear.
Yeah, we met somebody yesterday who said they play the adventure card game every week for 4 hours a week, right? And I say, how many games do you get in there? And they, oh, God, only one. I was like, and I was horrified, right? And I was like, what are you doing that makes your game take 4 hours? They said, no, we like it that way. Like, we make the game harder. We add a couple locations on. We, you know, they're doing the things that we're already doing, right? And so we were just like, well, okay, let's codify that into the game. Let's create the Pathfinder Adventures, which is the app that Obsidian put out that has been great for our game because it's brought us legions of new fans, introduced a concept called wild cards, where if you go on legendary mode, if you go on hard mode, legendary mode, these things just pop down on your screen and ruin your life. And you go, oh, yeah, okay, I guess we're dealing with that now. Everything's on fire. Okay, fine. So we thought of that, and we're like, yeah, we can totally put those in the game. If you want to make your game harder, here you go. Here's a global enchantment for you that makes your time a little more difficult. And so we've been...
Including everything is now on fire.
Yeah, that's one of them. And so we built a system of wild cards that we could use for that, and then we thought, okay, that's interesting. Can we use those for other purposes? So Chad wrote a scenario that grabs a bunch of wild cards and introduces them into the game, and the procedural generation says, how much do you want, right? You can build with a lot of them or with few of them, right? So so those tools actually were pioneered by people other than us, and we were happy to steal them back. So that has been really fascinating to watch. It's also been pretty cool. I mean, I'll say this. When we were playing Rise of the Runelords initially, we were running, you know, 45-minute games, and that's what I would tell people. They'd say, how long does this game take? Oh, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. Mummy's Mask doesn't really run in 45 minutes. I mean, you have the traders at the end, and you have, you know, a little more complicated environments that you have to go through and stuff like that. So when we put in these new rules to allow for smaller locations and fewer locations and stuff like that, suddenly we were running 30-minute games. And it was pretty great, because one of the things I really love about Pathfinder Adventures is I can play multiple games if I've got a couple hours to kill, I can just go through them and I really liked having the ability to do that. We also wanted to cut down on setup and teardown time a little bit, so we put some rules in the game that made that process a lot easier. So that you don't, you just take care of it as you go along. We've now got, like, we've noticed that people will create piles of banished cards that they have to get rid of at the end of the game, right? They just throw them over there and they have to sort them all. So we created a rule that just basically takes care of that at the end of every turn. We also made sure that one of the things that we wanted to get rid of was cards that stuck around but for no purpose. So those just start to disappear. Things like closed locations and things like that had nice little corner exploits, but really weren't helping the game at all. So we just sort of filed all the edges down so that we could get a slightly sleeker game that I think people will like quite a bit.
Yeah. The other thing, I mean, we're still very early in the Pathfinder playtest process. We're at this point basically at the same level of exposure that you guys are. At this point, I look over at Vic and say, we're going to get a playtest PDF soon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. But yes, so we're at that level. So it's actually been really great because we started working on this with the idea that, you know, that a new Pathfinder was going to come out, but not when or not exactly how, and what was going to evolve for us. But as we've been going, it's been nice to see how these concepts merge together. So, for example, one of the things that we had been talking about for a while was sort of streamlining how proficiencies work in the game. This is deep, specific stuff. You don't need to worry about that, especially if you're listening at home. But the nice thing about it was when we saw how Pathfinder Playtest was handling proficiencies, we're like, this is great because it merges very nicely. When you see these two concepts come together, you're going to say, oh, yeah, I see that how this came from. It turns out, I think they both came from the same origins. They didn't develop one after the other, but it merges very nicely, giving us that point to sort of smooth down and wear off the rough edges. I'm trying to think of anything else. We've also taken the opportunity to adjust some of the card types.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things Liz has been championing a lot, so I'm going to see if she wants to talk about it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so one of the great things about kind of hitting the card game with the defibrillator pals is that we kind of go back a little bit and analyze, you know, after, I don't know, 1,600, 1,700 cards, whatever it is we're at right now, unique cards.
3,000,
sorry, I'm way off. Uniques? All right. after that much, really sort of evaluate how the greater sphere of the game interacts and just, like, look at basic, really kind of bigger things, like, wow, blessings are powerful. Blessings are so powerful that you almost never want to take anything but a blessing, unless you have, like, a very specific power or interaction for your character that somehow makes that better. But blessings are really, really good. They do everything. Maybe they shouldn't do quite so everything. And maybe we want more friends. Maybe we want armors, which kind of feel like a drag, because you're like, who wants to bet on failure? right? Like, this would be great to save my life, but no, I want to win instead, so I'm going to take the, you know, giant axe, because that's cool. So, yeah, so sort of adjusting the sort of power levels and concepts of whole card categories. So now allies, for a specific example, allies are helpful to everyone where you are, in a small way. And they also are better at exploring. Or, because, you know, if you've got your friend, the Sorcerer's Acolyte, pokes in the next room, they're better with magic stuff. They're like, ah, I got this. So, that kind of idea. Let's see, is there anything...
We introduced, we grabbed some concepts that we experimented with in the Ultimates decks, especially around how armor works. We decided that that having some different methods of expressing armor was good for the game because we thought that some of our mechanics for getting rid of armor when you didn't need it weren't having the effect that we were hoping to have, so we decided to try some things where you see in the playtests, some of our armors display now, some of our armors recycle themselves better.
Yeah, and they have generally will have broader effects, like during a fight, because if you've ever done fighting in armor is more than just if you get hit, it hurts less. It's if you get hit, you could ignore it and keep fighting. Right, so it keeps you in the fight longer, it makes you a more effective combatant. So we kind of played with armor around that idea a little bit more to make it a more interesting boon to keep around and wear.
Spells got a pretty significant revision. They now banish as their regular cost, so that if you're Valoros and you're throwing around spells, you just only have to read the part where you throw this card away. Don't even bother with anything else. But there's a new step in the game that cleans up, as I mentioned, in the recovery step, where if you're a particularly talented person, if you're proficient in Arcane or Divine, which is a new thing you can be, you have a chance to recharge that spell or discard it if it doesn't get recharged. And so we wanted to make sure that while that's functionally very similar to how it works now, we wanted to go through and figure out how we were expressing everything in the game so that it made the most sense for somebody who just was flipping through their cards trying to figure out what to do. And so so we did that. Weapons and items basically didn't get too much of a big change. They got some new things. I now am impressed that we managed to make the dagger the most valuable card in the game. I have no idea how that happened.
Mike is totally happy about this change, in case you couldn't tell.
I'm thrilled. A new type of card, although it has an analog in Mummy's Mask, I'm sorry, is the Scourge. Scourge's job is to make your life worse, and you can get a lot of them. We started to take all those things that we had to explain in great detail, like how a ghoul hurts you and stuff like that. We had all those things. We're like, why don't we just put those on cards and just assign them to people?
Yeah.
We're not the first person to think of this idea. There's a perfectly good RPG product called the Condition Deck. That I think that's what it's called.
The Condition Cards.
Condition Cards. With a bunch of funny looking.
It's like something Piezo.
Yeah, Piezo.
Yeah.
Piezo does those. And
they make.
And we were looking at that, and we're like, why can't we do that? Why can't we just give you a little marker?
Have a status condition that is you are bleeding out and someone needs to heal you, kind of a thing. Or you've been dazed and now are wandering around going, oh, my eyes.
And so, we introduced a series of markers to add to the game so that you can keep track of this a lot easier. And, we just started, like, looking at all the cards that we had created and saying, can we come up with some genericized concepts that worked a little bit?
So Scourges are, I'm going to interrupt, Scourges are especially a good example in my mind, because if you look back over the sets, that concept really started with the cannibal haunts way back when.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just henchmen cards that stick around and do a thing. We're like, okay, we can make this work. But then we wanted to do it again. In Skull and Shackles, we wanted curses, because you're going to go run around pirate isles and go underwater, you're going to get cursed. Okay, so now we have cannibal haunts and we have curses. And then Wrath had some bad effects. And so we kind of built up that idea over time, eventually arriving at Mummy's Mask Scourges, which are pretty much the way they're implemented now, but instead of being slightly different versions and having cards that get rid of cards that have the curse trait or the haunt trait or displayed next to you, we're like, okay, we clearly wanted that concept. We kind of made it work. Now we can start over a little bit, take a step back. Anything that needs to adapt, we can come up with some sort of conversion document, but we can implement that concept in the game sort of from scratch, starting over, so it doesn't feel quite so cobbled together and have the rough edges.
Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about that is, by taking a step back as of like Mummy's Mask, the curses were very specifically like around the Osirian concept of you're opening up crypts and there's undead things cursing you. So we were able to step back a bit for this core set that's generic and versatile, like what, and ask ourselves what are the most common status conditions we want people to face. We'll put those in the core set, and then potential future sets like from the Crimson Throne and things will have their own scourges that bring flavor to that adventure.
I'm told I'm going to get a card called Plagued. I haven't actually seen it yet, but I don't want it.
There might be some disease in Curse of the
Yeah.
Small spoilers.
Looking forward to that.
But I think that one of the biggest effects we've had been able to engage, I had a playtest this morning, which had a delightful moment, like, yes, spot on, that's what I wanted. We had some playtesters playtesting this morning, and a couple of them had played the game a lot. And there's this guy who's like, wait a second, guys, we should group up at the same location. That seems to be an effective strategy. Let's keep doing that. Yes. The don't split the party is working. So by...
Of course, we have reinforced that with lots of things that punch you in the nose if you haven't all been together.
Of course.
There's a little bit of that.
I thoroughly enjoy it, dumping horrible things on big groups all at once. And they're like, oh, so, why did we bring so many people here?
So that was an excellent handoff, because I didn't set that up. But I would say the other big thing that to me is important in core, the other big comment, the other big feedback to address is that... especially if you're a more hardcore board gamer coming into to P DACG. The game feels cooperative, but it doesn't often feel like you're working together as a party. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. Some of it's emergent behavior, and some of it's just how the game works. But there are many ways in which you are encouraged or more or less required to split up, to spread out a little bit, because of how the mechanics work. And because we have a chance to step back again, we took a look at that and we said, okay, we want a little bit more interactivity, we want a little bit more cooperation. One of the first things that happens, and we talk about this all the time, one of the first things that happens when we teach the game to a new person is they're like, okay, I'm sitting here and playing the game, the three of us are playing, Mike wanders into a room and wanders into something bad and gets beaten up. And I'm like, okay, great, how do I help him? And the answer, honestly, right now is, well, one, it might be too late. Two, do you have the right cards to help them? Three, are you playing a character that can help? And those answers aren't always yes, right? Sometimes you might just... And when that happens, people figure out the game and they come together and they figure out that how you work together is a big part of building that system mastery and sort of learning how to play the game. But we wanted to feel a little more interactive and a little more cooperative from the beginning. So we said, oh, well, why do we always encourage you to spread out? Right? So can we adjust that? So one of the rules that we're looking at is how guarding works when a villain flees. We tweaked that rule a little bit, and we have a few varieties of that. And now you don't feel like you have to spread out immediately. You could run into a thing and be overwhelmed, but if you have a friend with you, maybe they can help. Maybe, you know, Mike's still going to get beaten up. We're always going to put the pain on Mike here. But either Liz or I could save him, so it's not a disaster for us. Just Mike got beaten up. We'll fix that later.
seems like something you could live with.
Yeah. And it turns out with a few very simple rules changes, which don't even have to like change the whole game, but a few simple rules changes, we can really get people in a mode where they're like, oh, yeah, grouping up is actually really good. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally the Drake flies in and breathes on everybody. And, oh, that's fun too.
Yeah. But like, to get a specific example, like because like, oh, it's safer to stick together most of the time, and it's more beneficial. Like, we're able to introduce the idea in scenarios, according to the villain scenarios, where, oh no, there's a vault here. There's a vault. Once you go in it, you can't leave until it's safe, totally cleared out. So either we can sacrifice one person to go in there by themselves and hope they can hold their own, while the rest of us try to find the villain elsewhere. Or we all keep sticking together and try to chase the villain into this vault. Who's willing to go into the vault by alone? And then, like that moment of decision and strategy is really interesting to me.
Every one of our tabs on our giant spreadsheets has gone through a careful reanalysis of what his job is. You know, I mean, like, we've been making so many cards that there's times when we've done now everything on every card type. We've made every... In some sense, we've broken down all the barriers from card type to card type, because now we have exceptions on card types that do things that other card types do all the time, right? And so we're like, okay, for a core set, what do we want? What do we want people to take away from... They've got an extra armor. What does that mean? They've got an extra weapon. What does that mean? What kind of character are they turning into? And that allowed us to imagine that we could be a little freer with some other things that we had in the game. Like, for example, we're no longer saying things like, at the end of a scenario, you gain a card feat. It seems like a perfectly natural thing to say. Everybody understands it. You go to that section. We're now saying gain a feat. You can do whatever you want. And the reason that's true is because we know what kinds of card feats people are going to want and when they're going to want them. We know when they're going to want skill bonuses and such. And so they can take care of that stuff by themselves. We don't have to be so restrictive. We spent a lot of time making sure people couldn't do things that they wanted to do because it didn't work for the game. You can't pass around a magic sword. You can't help your friends. You can't, you know, and stuff like that. And we're just like, man, you know, what if it's just... Here are all the things you can do. We'll take care of making sure you regret that. We got that. We're good enough at that. We'll take care of punishing you when you make the wrong choice. Just make the choices that you want to make. And it became a much more liberating game. Yeah.
Well, that was an innovation from Pathfinder Society. But...
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically after working with organized play and tier systems, I kind of hit a point where I was just like, I feel like we're a lot of hoops and we're trying to figure out a lot of ways to describe how characters are maybe compatible, even though maybe there's 4 or 5 feet difference between them. And something that I'm hoping we can stick with is basically a concept where you can total up your feats and call it your level, and finally say, I am a level 18 character, and I'm going up against a Rune Lord, and you have that really much more common theme with the RPG that way. You know, I can say, I have my paladin, he has his avenger, or whatever, or she in this case. I think that feels a lot closer to the RPG in that respect. Not a ton of time left. Do we want to talk some about Curse, or do we want to keep going to core?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been talking and not letting Keith talk, but Keith can talk about Curse.
Sure. Curse of the Crimson Throne. Very brief background. I was brought onto Lone Shark more than 3 years ago. Part of it because I had intense experience with Curse of the Crimson Throne, running it for 3 different groups, including 2 basically simultaneously. Chad was one of my players. Mike and Chad and I met in Las Vegas, and we brainstormed on it. And then we went off and worked on Mummy's Mask, and I did 3 organized seasons of play. And so I'm actually really excited to get back to Curse and to really dive in on it. I've got a ton of ideas. We have some characters picked out, although not finalized. I've had Quinn sitting in a spreadsheet again for more than 3 years, and I actually really like how he's playing right now. But I mean, our hope is that there won't be any iconics that haven't been statted out in one way or another by the time we're done with Core and Curse. So whether that's if Fumbus the Alchemist makes it or not, whether that's Quinn, Cass, whoever else we can sneak in there, as long as they play well, I think that will be a lot better for folks and be able to say, look, I love this iconic, and they're actually in the card game as well. In terms of Curse itself, they mentioned that we're going to have some plague-type conditions. Those of you who are familiar with it, Curse of the Crimson Throne is very classic fantasy, but it's got a lot of interesting elements to it. So you have a city that you call home that you really want to help and protect. It happens to also have a lot of devils and evil thieves and all those other kind of things that make home an interesting place. So we want to have mechanics in it for, as you protect, preserve, and Carosa, and you do more to it, you make some friends and you find some things. And these are things that you kind of build up in your home base of sorts that you can call on in later missions. And that's a big deal of your progress. It's not, I got a feat and I got a sword, but also my friend Cressida Croft is really good at my back if I'm ever in trouble. And so I think that is something that's going to be really interesting there. We also have a couple of different scenario types that I think will be a lot of fun. And some of those you've probably seen if you've played all the organized play scenarios, but we have ones that are more like chase scenarios, ones that are more like investigation scenarios, because you're going through and you're not just hunting down the villain, because often in Corvosa, you're not allowed to. You're going, well, we know there's that guy, and we know it's a bad guy, and we're going to deal with him, but it turns out he's paid his vice tax, and so the government says we're not allowed to kill him until he stops paying his taxes. So I think that that'll be a very interesting. It's got a lot of great monsters and barriers and things that we'll be able to apply to all kinds of organized play, so I'm also looking forward to whatever we do with that. Last night at the banquet, I saw the Return of the Rune Lords thing. I saw that there was a Reef Claw messing with them in Corvosa, and I'm like, wait, we might be able to do some scenarios with that. I mean, they haven't asked us yet. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know those things. I think they're going to be great building blocks. I think Curse will be really good. Again, full 6 adventures. I think that everyone will like it. I'm not nearly as worried as Mike was about people needing to run out of content quickly, because I think between Core and Curse, and then you might want to go back and replay all those other previous sets now that you've got some more things to mess with, and all the things that Chad was talking about where we're messing with adventure difficulty and speed. I think that people who are looking for a lot of challenge will find that we've definitely got their back. The equivalent of the Pathfinder Adventures hard and legendary modes. And so I think that we're really digging in. I think that is the main things we're getting out of it. Do we want to get any more questions?
Did Vic want to talk?
Some questions.
Yeah. Does anybody have any questions?
We got about 5 minutes worth of questions.
So the thought process behind the core set that has Dragon's Demand to have future modules released that can like template onto that core set that you could play like, you know, Nightmare or other scenarios that are released like that?
Yeah, basically, I don't know what we're going to do because we've been focused on core and curse exclusively, so we have no plans. I want to be very clear that the next product we do after Curse of the Crimson Throne will be a complete surprise to me because I have no idea what it is. But it's not going to be Return of the Rune Lords. So time travel is not showing up yet. So basically one of the things I noted was we were only telling the biggest stories. And I liked Emerald Spire, and I liked Dragon's Demand, and I liked a number of other products that Paizo made that were just far too small to make a complete adventure path out of. And I was like, we got to be able to do this kind of stuff. So, like, one of the things to note is that Dragon's Demand runs out after Adventure 3. Stop. That's the end of the adventure. There's no reason an adventure path couldn't just be one adventure, right? There's no reason that adventure path has to start at adventure one. So we could conceivably do an adventure path that was adventures 4 and 5. So if you just finished Dragon's Demand and you wanted something to do, you could just go do that, right? There's no reason we can't, now that we've decoupled the objects, if we ever wanted to do it, it's possible to do an RPG, ACG, hybrid product a lot easier because we could just say, in the back, we'll take up, you know, 5-10 pages and give you the thing you just played, you know, thing you just read in RPG form, we can give you that in ACG, right? Like, now that we have the tool set that we can always play a game, no matter what it is, we can always play a game with the core set, all we have to do is give you the materials necessary to upgrade that through, you know, either like even through drive-through cards and any number of other things. It'll just be vastly easier to bring in new content than we've ever been able to do.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So you mentioned clawing back the wildcard powers from the Obsidian Portal edition. Is there any plan for expansion into that medium, Chris?
We don't speak for Obsidian. We've been very happy to see what Asmodee Digital has been doing with the distribution of that. They've been constantly complimentary every time I run into them at a convention. So we love them, and hopefully we'll see them continue to do things as much as they want to do. Other questions?
We're real close to time, so yeah, please go ahead.
So is it a possibility that for the core set, that maybe addressing how to do previous editions as small, medium, and large locations?
Yeah.
Like a chart to do that?
We definitely want to, we've been talking about various ways we haven't solidified it, but we definitely want to go back to the original 4 boxes and say, this is what you should do with the new rule set. And sometimes that's really... almost not. Most times it's really nothing, right? It's basically just play the game you were playing. But every now and then it's like there are scenarios like the one that involves the storm jumping around from location to location in Skull and Shackles that we have to say, wait a minute, we're really going to need the closed location rule here. You know, things like that. Or we'll have to just say, this is a requirement that you know this or you can't play this scenario, right? And so I'd like to go back. I'd like to maybe give those some more flavor. I already know that there's a bunch of people who've done that work on the internet so that you get a better sense of... I'm not talking about anything as complicated as releasing a book or anything like that, but just like making the version of Rise of the Rune Lords that we would have made if we had this tool set and just playing with the same cards that you get in Rise of the Rune Lords. So yeah, I want to go back there. As we can. Looks like we have exactly 5 minutes left, as evidenced by the sign we were just told. Other questions?
Who was your favorite character?
We can spend a lot of time on that.
Sure, we can. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just really excited that Quinn may finally see his day in the sun.
Yeah, so we've
written so many versions of Quinn.
People have been asking for Quinn for a long time. He's a good character.
There is a degree to which I have been stopping people from putting Quinn in earlier products because he belongs in Curse of the Crimson Throne.
That's right.
I mean, he's just made for that.
That's right. And we've actually gotten a lot of things we were going to originally put in Curse of the Crimson Throne on our way. Like, we were originally going to put Radovan and Varian in Curse of the Crimson Throne because we really wanted to, you know, do those characters.
And so from the Academy, it's right there.
And then they got their own deck. And we're like, oh, well, we kind of did that. We're happy with that, right? Wouldn't you want to just play with that deck? If you want to play Radovan and Varian, that's great. Do that. We've been enjoying playing with... So around the office, we play with pawns. Now they're going to be in the game.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize until Friday that wasn't known, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool, right, that we're going to eliminate the token card in favor of people playing with pawns. You know, things like that. Just basically, the whole thing is designed to take the experience closer to the game we've been playing around the office for years, right? And so we're just really happy that we got... Paizo was kind enough to give us the time to think this stuff through. When we said, you know, this is going to require us to put some other products on hiatus for a while, because this is hard, right? And so we got that time, we used it well, and, you know, it really seems to... This weekend was a big validation moment, right? It was like we brought a thing along, and people could have said, no, I don't think you're making the same game. We're out. That didn't happen. I don't think it's going to happen. Because it's the same game, it's just a lot better. And I think that's a pretty good place to be. Cool.
All right. I think we're done.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.